the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we now have our first team who has got to the conference finals. Looks like the Miami Heat last night took care of the Philadelphia 76ers, and they are the first team to hit the conference finals. They will be in the Eastern Conference Finals this year. So since we're talking NBA playoffs, that's where we'll start, is with the Miami Heat versus the Philadelphia 76ers. Game five, Miami absolutely dominated, 120-85. And then game six, they mostly dominated. It wasn't as dominant as that last one, but they pretty much absolutely killed this entire series. They won game six, 99-90. And so they ended up taking the series, and they have moved on to the Eastern Conference Finals. They won this series 4-2. And man, Jimmy Butler, he just went off. If you don't know, Jimmy Butler used to be on the Philadelphia 76ers a couple years ago. And things didn't work out for whatever reason. And so now he's with the Miami Heat. And so this is probably some good revenge for Jimmy Butler. And it's not only did he beat his old team, but he did it in dominating fashion. While his entire team stepped up and has been playing well, Jimmy Butler has been the driving force of this team, and they just played spectacular in this series. So it'll be interesting to see whoever they face, whether it be Milwaukee or Boston. They're a damn good team, and so getting this rest will be good for them, since they've got whoever they're playing is going to be playing some great defense against them. Now that series is over, you kind of feel for Joel Embiid of the 76ers, man, because he just had such a great season. He was just dominating the regular season like no other. He should have been MVP. He got robbed of the MVP. And then just all the injuries that he suffered throughout the postseason. You could tell he was just giving it all on his court, and just the rest of his team surrounding him just did not do well at all. James Harden did what James Harden does in the playoffs, and that is disappear, especially in the second half. Every single game of the second half of this series, he just disappeared completely. He was not a factor at all, except for, what was it, like game four, game five? I think it was game four where he had a really good game, but other than that, he disappeared like he normally does. So it's going to be interesting to see what the 76ers do with their future. It's looking like possibly Doc Rivers. He may get fired. And if he gets fired, I would love to see him as the Lakers coach, just saying. So I won't be upset if he ends up getting fired. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens here with the Philadelphia 76ers, because this was definitely a disappointing season for them. Especially with how much they dominated in the regular season, Embiid having the MVP type of season he had, and for them to end it like this and not even get to the conference finals is a pretty big deal. So we'll see what happens with the Philadelphia 76ers. All right, and then the other Eastern Conference matchup that is still going on, Milwaukee Bucks versus the Boston Celtics. This has just been exactly what you expected this series to be. It's been definitely the best series out of every matchup so far in this round of the playoffs. Game four, Boston took that game 116-108, which was, at first it was a pretty close game. Then Milwaukee ended up getting the lead, but then they lost that lead, and Boston ended up getting the win. And then in game five, Milwaukee ended up getting a real close win, 110-107. At one point, they were down. I can't recall how far they were down. I think it was like 15 points, something like that. Regardless, they made this great comeback. And now Milwaukee has the series lead right now going into tonight's game. They're up 3-2. So we'll see what happens in game six tonight. Either we're going to be tied, and we'll have another game this weekend. Or Milwaukee could close it out tonight, which wouldn't shock me. I did predict that this series would go seven, so I wouldn't be surprised if Boston ends up getting this win. But man, this has been such a great series between, you know, Giannis has just been exactly what I expected him to be. He has just been going off. He's been dominating in every single way. I mean, hell, in game five, they even left him wide open for this beautiful three to take the lead. And he knocked down that three, which is not his forte, but he knocks down those shots when he needs to, and he's just driving it down the paint. So I really like what Milwaukee's doing. But then on the other hand, you got Boston. They play excellent defense, and you got Jason Tatum having a great season. So we'll see how the rest of the series goes through this weekend. And we'll see who ends up facing the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Then moving on to the Western Conference, the Golden State Warriors versus the Memphis Grizzlies. This has been a very interesting series. Unfortunately, Ja Morant, he did get injured in Game 3, and it's looking like he's not even going to play the rest of the playoffs. It's not just for this series. It looks like even if they go to the finals, he will not be available. His availability is very limited, it sounds like, and it doesn't sound like he's really going to be available at all. So that really sucks if you're Memphis. And so Game 4, Golden State, they ended up getting the win 101-98. It was a close battle, but they got the win. And then Game 5, Memphis came out and absolutely stomped them to the curb without Ja Morant, 134-95. At one point in the game, Golden State was down by 55 points, which is just absolutely insane. But they didn't make any excuses for being down, and we'll see what happens with them in Game 6. Currently, Golden State has the series lead at 3-2, so they could close that out tonight. Or we could possibly see another Game 7 this weekend between these two. But it's been a battle between these two teams. I was very shocked at how the Grizzlies were able to step up in Game 5 and really just dominate Golden State without Ja. It's an interesting series. I wouldn't be shocked, though, if Golden State closes it out tonight, just because no Ja is going to... Is at some point going to cost them, and it's probably going to be tonight. So we'll see what happens in that series. And then the second matchup in the Western Conference right now, the Phoenix Suns versus the Dallas Mavericks, has turned into a series. I mean, for the most part, every game has been a blowout. Whoever wins just absolutely dominates. In Game 5, Phoenix absolutely dominated 110-80. But then in Game 6 last night, Dallas absolutely dominated 113-86. So right now that series is tied up at 3. We'll be seeing a Game 7, I believe, on Saturday night. So that's going to be an interesting way how this gets closed out. I think Phoenix will end up closing it out just because... the problem with Dallas has been exactly what I thought it would be. Everything's going to be on Luka, and while he's having an amazing series right now, nobody else is really stepping it up. They're stepping up slightly, good enough to get these wins. But generally speaking, I just kind of see the Phoenix Suns closing this one out tomorrow night. But we'll see. So we'll see who by Monday's episode, we will know who will be in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. So that'll be exciting. Like I said, tonight's matchups, Boston versus Milwaukee. Game 6 is on tonight. And then Memphis Grizzlies versus Golden State Warriors. Game 6 is also on tonight. So either one of those could get closed out. Milwaukee or Golden State can close those out. Or possibly we will have a Game 7 on Sunday night. I believe it looks like if we have these two go into Game 7, we're going to have a triple header on Sunday of Game 7. So we'll see what happens. It would actually be real fun if you're a basketball fan to see three Game 7s on in one day. That might be pretty exciting. So let's move on to the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs and see what's happening over there. Right now, currently, we have a whole lot of first-round matchups that are either tied they're just really close. It's crazy how close these matchups have been. So the first matchup that's still going in the first round are the Calgary Flames versus the Dallas Stars. Currently, Calgary's up on the series 3-2. So they could close that out or go to a game seven. But Dallas has been playing them really, really well right now. I do see the Flames closing it out in game six, though. Then the Edmonton Oilers versus the Los Angeles Kings right now is currently tied. They're going to be going to a game seven. And what did I tell you about those damn Kings? They know how to win, especially come playoff time. So we'll see what happens in that interesting matchup. And you've got the Florida Panthers versus the Washington Capitals. Right now, the Panthers are up on that series 3-2. And then you've got the Toronto Maple Leafs versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. Currently, this series is tied at 3. And then the last matchup left, we've got two. Then you've got the Carolina Hurricanes versus the Boston Bruins. That matchup's currently tied up at 3. And then you've got the Pittsburgh Penguins versus New York Rangers. Right now, the Penguins have the series lead 3-2. It does look like Sidney Crosby's going to miss the next game with a concussion. So that could play a huge factor into what goes on in this game six matchup between these two teams. But, I mean, look at how close those matchups are. And in the second round, we do have one matchup ready to go. The Colorado Avalanche swept their first series. And so they've been basically waiting the last week for their opponent. Who is going to be the St. Louis Blues, who just moved on in another close series. And in that matchup, I'm going to go with the Avalanche. The Avalanche, they've just been one of the most dominant teams this year. They dominated in the first round, and the Blues, they got taken to the brink in that one. So I just kind of see the Avalanche got that got a few days off of rest and preparation, and I think the Avalanche are going to take that series. All right, and then moving on to just a couple things that happened in baseball this week. The Los Angeles Angels rookie pitcher Reed Detmers threw a no-hitter this week. So the Angels just keep getting better with each and every game. I mean, not only are Trout, Ohtani, and the rest of their lineup just hitting at such an insane level, but their pitching is solid as well. And when you've got a rookie come out of nowhere and throw a no-hitter, that's great for you. Then speaking of another great pitcher, Justin Verlander, he almost threw a no-hitter this week. He threw a no-no through, looks like, 7 innings, and he ended up going 8 innings total. So he's still having an absolutely dominating season off of his last 2-year hiatus, basically, from injury. And then Christian Yelich, the Milwaukee Brewers outfielder, he hit for his third career cycle this week. If you don't know what the cycle is, that basically means you come up to bat and you get a single, a double, a triple, and a home run. And if you get that, that's the cycle. And he did. That's the third time he's ever done it in his career. So congratulations to Christian Yelich. And then currently right now, I don't know what's going on with the Houston Astros, but they are now on a 10-game winning streak. So get your trash cans out. Because we know they're all about the cheating, so maybe they decided to ramp up the cheating this past couple of weeks, and now that got them their 10-game winning streak. Just kidding. And then the last bit of baseball news, Clayton Kershaw, another great pitcher, he has landed on the injured list with some joint pain in his hip. So it was only really a matter of time before he hit the injured list, just because he's... he is a great pitcher, but over the last 4 or 5 seasons, he's just been very injury prone. And so it's not shocking to see him there, but I mean, hell, he's been pitching lights out so far. So so we'll see what happens there, but I expect it to be just a short stint on the injured list, and he should be back in no time. All right, and then moving on to the NFL, just obviously we had the schedule release, but before we get to the couple highlights on that, something hilarious was brought forth by this new mayor of Dallas. He had said, because Dallas is one of the biggest cities in America, he had floated the idea of maybe putting a second football team in Dallas. And the only thing I have to say about that is, come on now. You're going to put a second team in Dallas? Come on. First and foremost, Jerry Jones ain't going to ain't going to have that shit happen. It's all about the Cowboys. And even if Jerry Jones wasn't for it, it's not like you're going to all of a sudden get these random fans to come over and all of a sudden become Dallas whatever fans. Because the Cowboys, no matter how much they suck, they still own this state. I mean, even in Houston, there's a ton of Dallas Cowboys fans, and they have a team out there as well. It's just, I'm sorry, the Cowboys are the state of Texas, and acting like you're going to put a second NFL team in Dallas and act like they're going to do anything. I mean, hey, maybe they could win. I'm not saying they can't win. I'm just saying they're not going to have a lot of fans, because the thing about Cowboys fans is we actually aren't bandwagoner fans. I mean, if you're still hanging on to the Cowboys right now, especially over the last 20, 30 years, you're called a legit fan. And for the most part, Dallas fans are legit fans. And none of us are jumping ship for a second team in Dallas. So I just thought that was a very amusing thing said by the Dallas mayor, just because, I don't really see that happening, especially with Jerry Jones at the helm. That dude's not going to be giving up any of the limelight in Dallas to another football team. All right, and so like I said, the NFL schedule that was released last night, that's basically the last hurrah of football season, basically until all the off-season training camps start. OTAs basically begin for the most part next month. And then training camps don't start until the end of July. So, basically the last hurrah with football at this current point in time is the NFL schedule release. And they make such a big deal about it, even though I think it's pointless to really make a big deal about the schedule, because I mean, yeah, you can look at matchups, but who the hell knows what's going to happen through the season? You never know what injuries are going to happen. You never know what teams are going to be good, what teams are going to be bad. So I don't really put too much stock in the schedule release, but I understand it's the NFL, and everything they do has to be bigger than life itself, and they have to capitalize as much as they can on everything. And if people are watching or paying attention or getting excited about stuff, well, they got to, that's, it is what it is. So I'm not going to make any of these win-loss predictions on any team. I'm not going to say who has a it's just stupid to make predictions at this point, because we don't know what's going on. So basically, I'm just going to highlight a few games that I feel are noteworthy to discuss. So looking at week one, of course, that would be the week to discuss, just because that's the start of the football season. So the first game that we're getting is going to be the Thursday night matchup, and it's a doozy. It's going to be the Los Angeles Rams versus the Buffalo Bills. So we're getting two powerhouse teams. We're getting the defending Super Bowl champs and the Rams. And then you got the Bills, who are just a solid team who should be one of the top contenders for the Super Bowl this year. So that's a great way to start the season off. And then the first Sunday night football game of the week, of week one, is going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at my Dallas Cowboys. So awesome. We get to start the season off with freaking Tampa Bay. Fucking awesome. Hopefully that's not a loss by the Cowboys, but those motherfuckers, you never know. And then the first Monday night football game of the season is going to be the Denver Broncos at the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah, they're starting the season off already with Russell Wilson and his brand new team going up against his old team in Seattle week one. So that's probably one of the best games, especially of week one, just because it's going to be interesting to see the old guy go up against his old team in his old stadium, you know. So that's week one. Then also the Thanksgiving games are going to be the Buffalo Bills at the Detroit Lions, the New York Giants at my Dallas Cowboys, which is a great matchup right there, division matchup, right in the smack dab in the middle of the season. And then the night game is going to be the New England Patriots at the Minnesota Vikings. Then this year, another great thing that's happening is Christmas Eve is on Saturday this year, and basically what they're doing is that entire weekend, I think Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, we're going to be getting games, and so, but Christmas Eve is basically going to be the bulk of the games. It's, instead of Sunday like it normally would be, they're going to put the whole full slate of games on Saturday, which is excellent. But then on Sunday, Christmas Day, we actually get three different matchups, starting with the Green Bay Packers at the Miami Dolphins, then the Denver Broncos at the Los Angeles Rams, and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Arizona Cardinals. So Christmas weekend, that's going to be chock full of football, which is great. And then just a couple of notable Sunday night football games I thought were interesting. First one would be week four, Kansas City Chiefs at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's the first time these two will have played each other since the Super Bowl a couple seasons ago. Then week eight, the Green Bay Packers at the Buffalo Bills. That should be a very interesting matchup if both of these teams pan out the way they should. And then week 15, the reason why I thought this one was interesting, the New England Patriots at the Las Vegas Raiders, is because Josh McDaniels, the current coach of the Raiders, he used to be the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. So it'll be one of those kind of battles between Bill Belichick and one of his old coaching proteges. So that should be an interesting matchup. A couple of Monday Night Football matchups I noticed. One thing I did notice about Monday Night Football this year is it's almost, I want to say about 80% of the matchups are divisional matchups, which is weird. I don't think they normally do that. I think the good thing with doing that is it basically ensures that the games are going to be competitive, even if if one of the teams is kind of shitty, you know, at that current point in time. At least it's like if it ends up being a divisional matchup, you never know what's going to happen because they're divisional matchups. So that was the first thing I noticed about all the Monday Night Football matchups, is that the majority of them are divisional matchups, which definitely makes things interesting. The couple of matchups that I thought were most interesting on Monday Night Football are going to be week 15, the Los Angeles Rams at the Green Bay Packers, and then the Buffalo Bills at the Cincinnati Bengals. So those were the two matchups that looked most interesting, other than the other ones, just because they were divisional matchups. So that's really all we had going on sports-wise this week. And since the NBA playoffs is going on right now, and I've already done top 10 NFL players of the past that I've wanted to, that I wish I could have seen. And then I've also done a top 10 MLB players of the past that I wish I could have seen. So I felt like today would be a great opportunity to do my top 10 NBA players of the past that I wish I could have seen. So there are going to be 10 players throughout the history of the NBA who played before I was born, or their career was basically ending when I was really young, and I didn't get to see most of their career. So let's go ahead and start it off with number 10, Kevin McHale, power forward of the Boston Celtics from 1980 to 1993. He's known as one of the greatest power forwards of all time. He was very scrappy, but he was great on defense. But the thing about him is, not only was he great on defense, but he could shoot too. He won three titles with the Boston Celtics in 1981, 1984, 1986. He was a seven-time All-Star, three-time All-Defensive First Team, three-time All-Defensive Second Team, and he was the two-time Sixth Man of the Year. Basically, he came off the bench at the beginning of his career and would fill in for Larry Bird, but then when they became their championship-level team, he actually was a starter for the most part. But he definitely, when I look at highlights of him, I'm like, man, he was such a pure shooter, but his defense was just top notch. And then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I have Oscar Robertson. He was a point guard for the Cincinnati Royals from 1960 to 1970, who eventually moved to Sacramento and became the Sacramento Kings. And then he played for the Milwaukee Bucks from 1970 to 1974. He's basically known as one of the greatest all-around basketball players to ever play the game. He was a great scorer. He was a great shooter. He was a great passer. He was a great rebounder. One thing he's really known for were the triple-doubles that that he just would get on the regular. You know, a lot of people look at Russell Westbrook, you know, years ago, not currently, but years ago, the triple-double used to basically be his normal thing. And he was actually the second player to ever average a triple-double for a season. And the first being Oscar Robertson, who did that. He was the first to average a triple-double in the 1962 season. So his career highlights are he won a championship with the Bucks in 1971. He was the MVP, league MVP in 1964. He's a 12-time All-Star, 9-time first team. He was the Rookie of the Year, a 6-time assist leader. He's on all of the anniversary teams, the 35th anniversary, 50th, and 75th. And like I said, he was the first to average triple-double for an entire season in 1962. So he's just one of the most prolific shooters and just all-around basketball players to ever play the game. And so he's at number 9. At number 8 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Jerry West, the point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers from 1960 to 1974. He won a championship in 1972. He was the finals MVP in 1969. He's a 14-time All-Star, 10-time first team, 4-time All-Defense. He was the scoring champ in 1970. He was the assist leader in 1972. And he's also one of those players who's on every single NBA anniversary team. He's just known as one of the greatest point guards of all time. Just not only because he could score a lot, but I mean, you look at that, he was a 4-time all defensive team. So that says a lot, just what a prolific player he was. And he is the logo of the league. So, you're the logo for a reason. So Jerry West is number 8. At number 7 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Larry Bird. He played forward for the Boston Celtics, from 1979 to 1992. He was a 3-time champion, right up there with Kevin McHale in 81, 84, and 86. He was a 2-time finals MVP. He was a 3-time league MVP in 1984, 85, and 86. He was a 12-time All-Star, 9-time first team player, and Rookie of the Year in 1980. He's just one of the all-around great players. One of the awesome things that I wish I could have seen about him is he was very cocky on the floor, and he was such a dick at many times. And there would be certain points of the game where he would literally tell you what the play is going to be and where he's going to shoot the ball from. And he would look you in the face and say, yeah, I'm going to catch the ball right here. I'm going to shoot it and I'm going to make it. And he would do it. And he did it right in front of them. And just to see somebody as brash as that is just, it's something I enjoy. It's something I've always loved to see. And I think it would have been fun to have been around during those Boston Celtics Lakers days in the 80s when they were just going back and forth against each other because they were two great teams with some excellent Hall of Fame players. And so Larry Bird is number 7 on my top 10 NBA players of the past. At number 6 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish you could have seen Isaiah Thomas, point guard for the Detroit Pistons in 1981 through 1994. He won 2 championships, one in 89 and 1990. He was a 12-time All-Star, 3-time first team. He was the assist leader in 1985. And just one of the reasons why I wish I could have seen him is because this Detroit Pistons team, they were known as the Bad Boys. And the reason why is because they were dirty as hell. They played amazing defense and they would just wear you out. This team was Michael Jordan's thorn in his side for the first couple of his seasons. Like when Jordan finally got over this team, over the hump, and beat them in the playoffs, it was a big deal because this team was so dominating. And they didn't just dominate Jordan, man. Like, they dominated the Lakers, the Showtime Lakers. Like, this team, they were known for defense. But Isaiah Thomas, he was the driving force in this team. And while I put him on the top 10 NBA players of the past, just this team in general, I would have loved to have watched, even though they gave it to my Lakers. But they were just such an amazing team, such a crazy team. And I don't know if a team like that could still exist in today's soft-ass NBA. And at number 5 on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Wilt Chamberlain. He played center in the league for, first he started with the Harlem Globetrotters in, from 58 to 59. Then he played for the Golden State Warriors from 1959 to 1965. Then he played for the 76ers from 1965 to 1968. And then he ended out his career with the Los Angeles Lakers from 1968 to 1973. He is the only NBA player ever of all time to score 100 points. Unfortunately, that when he scored the 100 points, basketball wasn't filmed. They really only have like a couple highlights of the actual game, and really the only shot we have of him is in the locker room after the game, where he's just holding up a piece of paper that says 100 on it, because that was really the only way they could signify that it actually happened. And so it would have been crazy. I mean, it was awesome to see Kobe score 81 points. That's the closest we've ever come to Wilt Chamberlain doing that. But it would have been crazy to see somebody score 100 points, especially a center, because he was just so dominant. I mean, this is how dominating he was. He averaged 40 and 50 points in a couple of seasons over the span of his career. 40 or 50 points. That is astronomical. His career average is 30 points and 20 rebounds. So not only did he score a whole lot of points, but he was going to get you on the rebounds. And he was just a phenomenal player. He's a two-time champion. He won with the 76ers in 1967, and then he won one with the Lakers in 1972. He was the finals MVP in 1972. He was a four-time league MVP, 13-time All-Star, seven-time first-team rookie of the year, seven-time scoring champion, 11-time rebound champion, and one-time assist champion. So he covers all bases, one of the greatest all-around basketball players ever, and he played center. And it's just crazy to think what he did in his career. He's just one of the greatest, amazing basketball players of all time, Wilt Chamberlain, at number five on my list. Then at number four on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Julius Erving, also known as Dr. J. He was a forward for the Philadelphia 76ers, 1976 to 1987. He won a championship with them in 1983. He was the MVP of the league in 1981. He was an 11-time All-Star, 5-time All-NBA first team. But also the thing about Dr. J is he actually played before it was the NBA, when it was the ABA. And so he won two championships in the ABA. And then he was also a 3-time ABA MVP. So he dominated his entire career from start to finish. And what the number one thing Dr. J is known for are his slam dunks. He basically invented the slam dunk, like making it like what the slam dunk contest is today. You got to thank Dr. J for all of that. And that's one of the main reasons why I wish I could have seen him play, is not only his sheer and utter dominance, but just, the dunks at the time. They were just, it wasn't anything that anybody had seen at that time. So it would have been really cool to be around when Dr. J was playing. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen Bill Russell, center for the Boston Celtics from 1956 to 1969. Literally one of the most winningest players of all time. He won 11 championships as a player, but he also won two as a coach. So he has 13 championships total as a Boston Celtic. He's a 5-time league MVP, 12-time All-Star, and a 4-time rebound leader. And he's just like basically the godfather of basketball. He's like the Babe Ruth of basketball. When you think of basketball, this is basically where it started. Him and Wilt Chamberlain. But Bill Russell, nobody dominated like Bill Russell. And he just was such a spectacular player. But it's also very sad to kind of read about what it was like for him being a black man playing for the Boston Celtics at the time. I mean, obviously, racism was huge at this current point in time, 1956 through 1969. Nobody really gave a shit about black people at that current point in time. Even if you were one of the greatest basketball players and you were winning championships, one horrible story. They actually highlighted it on the show Winning Time. the HBO Max show about the Lakers Showtime era then. And they actually highlighted this, and I did fact check it to make sure it wasn't some over-exaggerated thing. But basically, it was kind of towards the end of his career. It might have even been when he was a coach. But some scumlords broke into his house and just vandalized the interior of his house. They graffitied it up with a bunch of racial slurs. They broke all of his trophies, all his achievements. And then they took a shit on his bed. Like, what vile piece of shit human beings. And when I read that, I was like, any dude who can, like, still go to work every day and still dominate. I mean, like, you got to really put it into perspective. He was like the LeBron James of now. You can't really see any Lakers fan or any Cavaliers fan or Heat fan, anybody who's a real legit LeBron James fan doing that to him. Maybe somebody who hates him. Yeah, you totally. But these were Boston Celtics fans who did that to Bill Russell. That's what's most, I mean, the whole act is vile. But the fact that they didn't even regard him as a human being and he did all of that for them and their enjoyment and their pleasure, it's just amazing to me that Bill Russell was able to put up with that actual load of bullshit and, you know, just still play, still coach, still stay there. And then in between when he retired, and then as recently, I want to say it was might have been about 15-ish years ago, his time with the Celtics, it did not end well. He did not speak with them. They did not speak with him. As a matter of fact, he did not even get a statue in front of the Celtics arena until a few years ago. Like, I want to say it was as recently as 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It was recent. And when you hear that, to me, that's just amazing because, you know, there's, as a Lakers fan, we have tons of statues all around our building. And I mean, you know, you got Shaq, we got Kobe, we got Magic, you got Kareem, we got every one of our dudes and we highlight all of them. And you would think that Boston would highlight Bill Russell immediately. And part of the reason why they didn't is just because both parties, it ended horribly. And it's good to see that they're finally giving him his dues because for everything he did for that team, he did it with grace and with what he put up with. Not a lot of people would be able to continue to be as great as he was. So not only did I want to see Bill Russell as an amazing basketball player then, but I just, you got to give it up to the dude for putting up with that kind of shit at that time. All right, and then at number two on my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen. Now, one and two, they're basically one, because I would have loved to seen both of these. If you notice, not many Lakers appeared at the bottom except for Jerry West. So these last two, they are Lakers, who I wish I could have seen. And like I said, they're simultaneous. You could switch either one at one and two, but I went ahead and put Magic Johnson at number two. Point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers from 1979 to 1991, and then he also played the 1996 season. Five-time NBA champion, three-time league MVP, 12-time All-Star, 9-time first team All-NBA, 4-time assist leader, 2-time steal leader. He was just one of the greatest basketball players of all time. When he hit the league, he was something different. That no point guard was as tall as he was. No point guard could work the floor like he did. And he was just something else. That's why they called him Magic, because that's what he looked like on the court. And he just totally changed the face of the Lakers. I would say to this day, if you ever were to say who is the face of the Lakers organization just in general, you would have to put Magic at number one. Just not just because of the championships, but I mean, he's easily one of the most recognizable Lakers. And he just loved being a Laker, and he still loves being a Laker, even though he is no longer, he's not a coach. He's not an owner anymore, but he still is a Laker for life. And, so definitely Magic Johnson at number two, but then at number one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And the only reason why I put him at number one is because, in my personal opinion, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the greatest basketball player of all time. I know everybody likes to talk about Jordan and LeBron, and I think part of the reason why, because Kareem almost never gets mentioned. And I remember the first time I started kind of doing research on the past players, not right now, but like just randomly when I've looked at players of the past and what they've done. It was very telling to me when I looked at Kareem's stats. I mean, he's literally, he owns like every stat. He's the all-time leading scorer still right now, even though LeBron's probably going to break that next year. But he's held the all-time leading scorer since his retirement. He's just absolutely dominated the league. Even he, not only did he dominate the NBA, but he dominated college basketball as well. He was an excellent high school basketball player. So just like Kareem is one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And it's always blown my mind that nobody will ever put him up there, even though, and I think the reason why is because he was more quiet and not as boisterous as a Michael Jordan or a LeBron or a Kobe Bryant or whoever else we're talking about when we're having that discussion. But to me, Kareem is the greatest basketball player of all time. And I think also another reason why he gets lost in the fray in that discussion is because of the time period he played in. Same with Bill Russell, because it's egregious to me that he's never discussed when you're talking about the greatest NBA players of all time. But Kareem, he played center for the Milwaukee Bucks from 1969 to 1975, and then he played for the Lakers from 1975 to 1989. He's a six-time NBA champion. He won one with the Bucks and five with the Lakers. He's a six-time league MVP, 19-time All-Star, 10-time All-First Team, Rookie of the Year, two-time scoring champion, one-time rebound champion, four-time blocks champion, and he also won three championships with UCLA in his college time. So, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, he's got the skyhook. He was just so dominating. And it would have been fun to see both him and Magic on the court. I think anybody who got to see not only those two, but then also the Boston Celtics that I mentioned in those 80s, you know, Larry Bird and Kevin McHale, it would have been great to see those two teams go at it with each other. So I've got Kareem at number one, but it could have been either Magic or Kareem. So my top 10 NBA players of the past, I wish I could have seen. 10, Kevin McHale. Number 9, Oscar Robertson. 8, Jerry West. 7, Larry Bird. 6, Isaiah Thomas. 5, Wilt Chamberlain. 4, Julius Erving, Dr. J. Number 3, Bill Russell. 2, Magic Johnson. And 1, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All right, guys. So that's my top 10 list for this week. Enjoy the rest of the NBA playoffs. Honestly, I'm rooting for three game sevens on Sunday night. That would just be a great, great day of basketball. Just three amazing game sevens, but we'll see how it goes. You know, we've got Boston versus Milwaukee tonight, Memphis versus Golden State tonight, and then game seven of Phoenix versus Dallas. So we got that going on. The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, they're getting hot. So we should see more of what the second round is going to be shaped out like by Monday. And then you also got more baseball this weekend. So enjoy the weekend of sports. And I will talk to you all on Monday. Peace out, homies.